Hello, welcome to PM. I'm Linda Mottram. Tonight, what you need to know about the government's new cash for business to keep staff on. $1,500 a fortnight for an expected 6 million Australians, a $130 billion package. Experts are also taking some hope from a slowing rate of increase of COVID-19 cases in Australia, but a caution tonight from economist Professor Quentin Grafton.
It's still exponential growth, so we've got to do much, much better. We can't continue with a 10% increase, more or less, growth on a daily basis.
And some Australians who've made it home from overseas say they're hungry and being treated like prisoners in forced quarantine.
There's no key or anything like that because obviously, yeah, we're not allowed to leave the room. This is not a hotel anymore. This is a government facility. So there's no room service. There's three meals a day and you get what you're given.
Now is the time to dig deep, and the Prime Minister has done just that with a massive new injection to support firms to pay their workers in what Scott Morrison has called the twin battles, the health and economic crises facing the nation.
This calls for unprecedented action. Governments making decisions like they never have before. And today our government has made a decision today, and that I announced today, that no government has made before in Australia in response to crises such as these. And I hope and pray they never have to again. In the past, on so many occasions, they couldn't. But today we can. Today we must. And today we will.
Well, it's a $130 billion package to keep workers in jobs for 6 months. Explaining the magnitude, Scott Morrison invoked the prospect of nations collapsing under the weight of the pandemic, possibly into chaos. We will not be one of those, he said tonight. It comes as the country reaches 4,000 confirmed cases of COVID-19. Tasmania and the ACT have recorded their first deaths. And with new restrictions on our movements and gatherings being enforced by the states and the territories, the Deputy Chief Medical Officer has again hammered home that it will be months before the pandemic passes. Now, the package the Prime Minister has delivered is mostly about a wage subsidy. They're calling it the JobKeeper payment, to be handed out over the next 6 months to try to keep people off welfare. It will go to employers who will be required to pass that cash on. Let's work through those details. Our political reporter Stephanie Boris is here. Steffi, how is this payment going to work and when does it start flowing?
Hello, Linda. Well, as you mentioned, there are $130 billion being handed out by the federal government over the next 6 months. It will go to employers. They're then expected it to pass that money on to employees. Now, it's $1,500 per fortnight per worker, and it's known as the JobKeeper payment. This figure is staggering, Linda. They're expecting 6 million people will benefit from this payment, and that really shows the scale of how many people will be affected by coronavirus and how it really affects businesses across Australia. Now, the payments will flow from the first week of May, but they're backdated from today. So what that means is the expectation is businesses will keep paying their employees and will then essentially get the financial support back when May starts. So it will be delivered through the ATO, through mechanisms that are already set up. So the government doesn't have to essentially build new means of giving this money out, and also that's a safety net for the government in terms of checking that this money will be handed to workers. The Prime Minister Scott Morrison said today's announcement is all about preparing for the months ahead.
This plan is about keeping those businesses together by keeping these employees in these businesses. We want to keep the engine of our economy running through this crisis. It may run on idle for a time, but it must continue to run. Our plan will see our businesses, large and small, right across our entire economy, share the load with our welfare system to deliver these important income supports.
The Prime Minister there. So, Steffi, who exactly is eligible?
Well, to be eligible, businesses need to show that their turnover has fallen by 30% or more, or if a business has an annual turnover of more than $1 billion, their turnover needs to have fallen by 50% or more. So this is open to essentially every business where their turnover has fallen by those figures I've just provided. Not-for-profits are included in this, plus any New Zealanders on 444 visas will also be eligible. I'll let Treasurer Josh Frydenberg explain a lot of the criteria for our listeners now.
It will be available to full and part-time workers, sole traders, and in the case of casuals, to those who have been with their employer for 12 months or more. From today, employers and sole traders will be able to apply to the Australian Tax Office for workers that are on their books as of the 1st of March. If employees have been stood down by their employer since March the 1st, they are still eligible for these payments.
To clarify that, Linda, journalists did ask about, you know, what happens if you have already been retrenched? Do you then go and ask for welfare, or will your previous employer be able to essentially keep you on? Both the Treasurer and the Prime Minister said that you as an individual need to talk to your employer and work out between the two of you whether they will essentially be able to take you back and pay you through this wage subsidy system.
Now, this has to be legislated, Steph, but Parliament's not due to sit again until August, so is it going to be recalled earlier than that?
It will be, in terms of which date. That's still yet to be decided. The Prime Minister said he's already spoken to Labor leader Anthony Albanese, who has indicated, and publicly as well, that he'd like to see Parliament resumed as quickly as possible. Our understanding is only 31 people need to show up, and the focus of those people that return to Parliament, they'll only be allowed to drive, so they won't be being put politicians on planes. Obviously, that's an attempt to slow the spread of coronavirus.
Also changes in this package to the Job Seeker payment. Just run us quickly through that.
The Job Seeker arrangement, of course, is through the welfare system. If you have a partner, there's a threshold as to whether you can receive that or not. That is being changed. So now, if you have a partner earning up to $79,762 per annum, you will be eligible for some amount of that Job Seeker payment.
Now, the Prime Minister invoked some really sobering images, didn't he, that some countries may collapse into possibly even chaos because of the hit from this disease. He says Australia will not be one of them. How did you judge his tone today?
He was obviously trying to be very optimistic with how Australia will handle this compared to other countries, because as you can expect, we are all comparing each other to other countries and seeing what governments are rolling out. And he was making it very clear that Australia's approach is different to many others. And this is like nothing we have ever seen before. So a very somber approach that he took today, but a very serious one and a confident one in saying Australia will get through this. And he hopes, though, that no government in the future we'll have to make announcements such as this, where we hear in one day $130 billion being announced. This is like nothing we've ever heard before.
It's just absolutely massive, isn't it? Thanks very much for that, Steph. Steffi Boris, our reporter in Canberra. Well, hundreds of thousands of workers are staring down the barrel of weeks, maybe months, of emotionally draining uncertainty. They are being stood down, so technically still employed, but for so many it's that heart-stopping question how much money is going to be coming in. Well, despite the government's offer of wage subsidies, employment lawyers say they are being swamped with calls from anxious workers in exactly that situation, who don't know what they're entitled to, if anything. Well, our business reporter David Taylor has also found the economic shutdown has opened an employment rights can of worms.
This father worries about his daughter. She's been stood down from her position as a store manager at a major retail outlet.
The managers across Australia were told that they were ceasing trading at the end of the day. They were to sack their permanent casuals and they were to sack their casuals.
And these are the terms, he says, the company gave to its employees as they walked out the door.
We can give you a week's leave because we're only closing for 8 weeks. Now, look, that's not true. That's taking advantage of vulnerable young women.
The law says if no work is available to staff, a firm can either dismiss or stand down workers without pay. PM has also confirmed that Australia Post has restricted access to its corporate offices in Melbourne, Sydney, Adelaide and Brisbane. Staff who have been stood down have been told they can have access to annual leave and they can still take leave if none is available, but their pay will be docked proportionately when they return to work. The ABC also understands that some workers who have asked to stay working but from home have had this request denied. Australia Post told us it didn't comment on speculation. Lawyer Pamela Hanrahan works as a professor at the University of New South Wales's Business School. She says various retail outlets and Australia Post may be perfectly within their rights to stand workers down without pay and deny employees the right to work from home. But she also says the moves have exposed how vulnerable many workers' positions are.
Certainly employers would have an obligation, moral if not legal, to look for other meaningful work for people to do. So if there's a person might not be able to do their normal job, but if there are other things that they can do that's real work, and they can do that from home, then the expectation would be that the employer would look to redeploy them or perhaps get them working on something else wherever they can do so. And I think if employers move immediately to stand people down without exploring those other options, they may find themselves in a difficult position.
It certainly opens up a can of worms, though, in terms of the Fair Work Act and all sorts of different enterprise bargaining agreements that have been reached over the past few years. It's difficult to work out where the head or tail is.
Yeah, it is. I think, you know, many years ago there was sort of an assumption about how people's working arrangements operated, and that's changed over time, not only for casual employees but also for people who work in the gig economy. And there are lots of sectors, not just retail, I suppose, and hospitality, which we've been very focused on, but, for example, in the arts and so on, you know, where people's employment depends on all of us being able to gather together. And for people in those industries, insecure employment's becoming a really significant issue.
University of New South Wales Law Professor Pamela Hanrahan with David Taylor. You're listening to PM on the radio, on the ABC Listen app, and you can get the podcast version as well. I'm Linda Mottram. On Twitter, I'm at Linda Mottram. Ahead, why one expectant Australian mother in the coronavirus hotspot of New York City started to consider a home birth rather than hospital.
The idea of being alone and going through that on my own without my husband there just felt a little extreme, and it wasn't something that I could really overcome.
Well, many people today have been trying to come to grips with the nation's latest and most drastic restrictions on socialising. Some could be forgiven for getting a bit confused as they start to consider all the many ways we usually gather. But the rules as they stand mean just you and one other, unless they are members of your household. Annie Guest has been endeavouring to answer the major questions about that for you.
From Bondi Beach to backyards, Australians continue to flout the rules. Here's Queensland's Police Commissioner, Katerina Carroll.
On the weekend of the 21st and 22nd of March, police attended some 600 noisy parties. This went up significantly this last weekend to 900.
But the Prime Minister insists two's company, three's a crowd.
Unless it's your household, the family, those who are living at your residence, that being with only one other person in as a gathering outside is what is required.
Gatherings will be reduced from 10 to 2 people. Scott Morrison's headline message sounds simple enough, but the detail requires careful attention, as he and others, including Queensland's Chief Health Officer, Dr. Jeanette Young, articulated.
Everyone should be staying at home except for 4 different situations.
Dr. Young says they include buying essential supplies, working when it can't be done from home, exercising with one other or your household, and accessing healthcare or caring for someone. But then there's those other exceptions, as outlined by the Deputy Chief Medical Officer, Professor Paul Kelly.
Funerals where the maximum is 10, weddings the maximum of 5, and family units. So obviously families of more than 2 can continue to go have indoor or outdoor gatherings.
The Northern Territory's Chief Minister is Michael Gunner.
If you can't keep up with all the different rules, I don't blame you at all. So just remember 5 words. Stay home if you can.
NT Police won't prosecute those who gather in numbers larger than two at this stage. Victorian Premier Daniel Andrews is talking tougher.
If you are outside or in your backyard gathering in more than two people, if you're having friends over for dinner or friends over for drinks that are not members of your household, then you are breaking the law. You face an on-the-spot fine of more than $1,600 and Victoria Police will not hesitate to take action against you.
As the number of people in Australia's intensive care units with coronavirus climbs to 55, the Deputy Chief Health Officer, Professor Kelly, acknowledges the conundrum of helping elderly or frail relatives.
Families need to examine that themselves, what is the safest for their own elderly parents. If they're able to look after themselves with support in their own home, that may be the best option. But for others, particularly the most frail elderly people requiring, for example, a lot of home care from outside of the home, it may be best for them to shelter with relatives.
The Deputy Chief Medical Officer, Professor Paul Kelly. Our reporter there was Annie Guest. Well, a new paper today says despite some signs that the rate of growth in infections in Australia is slowing, it is still exponential and more has to be done to get that rate down. Entitled Sums, Germs and Fear. It's our daily life, that little title, isn't it? The paper is by Quentin Grafton from the Australian National University and Tom Compass from the University of Melbourne. It concludes tougher social restrictions combined with a wage subsidy for those who lose jobs is a good approach to share the burden by saving the most vulnerable in this pandemic and supporting disadvantaged workers while also flattening the infection curve. I spoke to Professor Grafton earlier.
So by April 1st, we'll have approximately 5,000 confirmed cases, and then the April 2nd, we're going to have even more confirmed cases. Where we end up, of course, is dependent on what we do in terms of social or physical distancing.
Let's talk about the numbers of deaths. You've assumed a mortality rate of 1%, I think, and we can talk about the complexities there in a second. But
yes,
on the numbers, how many deaths are you forecasting in Australia?
It really depends on what happens in terms of our physical distancing. So we present in our discussions that came out today that there are two cases. One case where we could end up with 20% of the population that are get infected. We would consider that a worst case, and we don't forecast that will happen. So be clear, we do not forecast that because we already do have physical distancing in Australia. But in that worst case scenario, if you take a 1% mortality rate, you could end up with approximately 50,000 Australians that would lose their lives. That's premature deaths. Now, you can compare that with a case that's, let's say, China. So as far as we can tell, given the data that's available to us for China, it seems that China ended up, and perhaps not the end of the story at the moment, but certainly at this point in time, China seems to have ended up with about a 1% infection rate of its population. And although it did delay in terms of its actions early on, once it acted, it did enforce very strict physical distancing. So we would say that's maybe where we will end up in Australia. We might do better than China. It depends on what we do in the next few weeks. But let's say that, take that case, the China case, let's say it's 1%. And you can compare the difference in terms of number of deaths. And so if we take the 1% case, it's maybe 2,500 deaths, premature deaths, if we take the China case. If we let this virus go and grow exponentially, which it is at the moment, and don't do the controls that we have already initiated, then, of course, we'd end up in a much, much worse situation.
And, you know, the physical distancing, as you say, we already have measures in place. We don't know the full impact of them yet, do we? But we do know it's reducing infections.
So at this stage, it certainly looks like it. And certainly from my anecdotal evidence and other evidence that's been provided out there, it seems that Australians started to physically distance early last week in a more meaningful way. So it does appear that a good proportion of the population is physically distancing right now. So that may indeed be leading to these reductions. But let me add here and be very clear about it to your listeners. This is a good news in the sense the rate of increase has declined, but the rate of increase is still positive. And it is still exponential. So at the current rate, our numbers of confirmed cases in Australia of COVID-19 are doubling every 7 days. So previously it was doubling every 4 days. And that's a big improvement. It may not seem like much, but it's a big improvement when you have exponential growth like that. But it's still exponential growth. So we've got to do much, much better.
And there is a balancing act here, isn't there? Physical distancing, strict physical distancing, what some might call a lockdown, is bound to see us do so much better. But on the other hand, there's all those other factors, isn't there? There's our livelihoods, our social fabric, our connections to the world. I mean, how do we strike that balance?
This is extremely, extremely important. There's no question there's very large costs in terms of imposing sufficient physical distancing. Huge costs are being borne by New Zealand and the United Kingdom. Already in Australia, we see that hundreds of thousands of people have lost their jobs. So, and there's a huge budget implications for governments. But it's really important for people to understand that we would be bearing costs if we didn't do physical distancing. Not only these premature deaths, if we take the extreme worst case, which we're not projecting, by the way, then the loss to the Australian economy just from the loss of those lives is about 10% of our gross domestic product. Certainly from our perspective, there's no question that the current infection rate in Australia, it makes sense to go hard and to go early, and we will generate much, much greater benefits for us overall into the future if we do that.
Professor Grafton, thank you for your time today.
You're more than welcome.
Professor Quentin Grafton from the Australian National University, and there's a longer version of that interview on the website. Well, as we're told to hunker down, thousands of Australians across the globe are still trying to get home to do just that. The federal government's plans to repatriate some Australians from a cruise ship in Uruguay have hit a snag, while others languish in countries with no prospect of a mercy flight. And once they get back to home soil, conditions for those in strict quarantine are challenging. Isabel Rowe reports.
Standing on the top deck of their ship in Uruguay, 134 Australians record a plea to their government.
And we are a healthy ship. We are trying to get home to our families.
Passengers of the MV Ocean Atlantic have been stuck at the port of Montevideo for 10 days, waiting on help from Australian authorities to get home. On Friday, Foreign Minister Maurice Payne announced two government-facilitated flights from South America, run by tour company Chimu Adventures. Kim Dugovric is among the passengers aboard the ship. He says the cost of the government's mercy flight has suddenly gone up, and he and other stranded Australians are being asked to pay.
In their media release a week or so ago, they said they would guarantee and underwrite the charter flight, and we've heard nothing from the government or DFAT since then. We've been asked by Chimu Travel to pay an extra $4,000 Australian dollars, so a sum total of in the vicinity of $9,000 Australian dollars for a flight back to Sydney, and we've heard nothing else other than continued requests for more money.
Kim Dugovric says the charter flight won't leave unless it's fully paid for, and he's worried that time is running out.
We're really concerned that very soon they'll say you have to leave the dock, and that will be the end of our plans for flying home.
And then where do you go?
Well, that's a very good question. We think that our only option is to go home on this ship, but apparently that's not possible for a range of reasons, and it would probably take a month of sailing to get home. So, I don't know. We could end up in a detention centre in Montevideo. I have no idea.
Australians in Nepal are also pleading with the government to help subsidise the cost of a charter flight home. Julian Temponi is among several Australians who were out of phone range when the pandemic started and emerged to find they had no way out. He says there's been no offer of assistance from Australian authorities.
The only commercial flight at $4,000 Australian dollars is unpayable for many, many Australians here, particularly those supporting families and young children.
And he's concerned about the safety of those who miss that plane and are forced to stay.
What's going to happen if the Australian government doesn't act to support us at all and the virus spreads and the airports are closed for up to 6 months or longer, and suddenly you've got homeless Australians in the street during a pandemic?
In a statement to the ABC, Foreign Minister Maurice Payne says there is a mercy flight scheduled to depart Uruguay on Wednesday, and the government intends to reimburse passengers for the price rise. For those who have made it to Australian shores, the prospect of spending 14 days in police-controlled quarantine is daunting.
There's no fresh air, and the windows don't open, there's no balcony, and no, you can't go for a walk.
Queensland woman Olivia Lemon and her family have been locked in a room at a hotel in Sydney's CBD after arriving home from London. Her 63-year-old mother has severe food allergies and was given no more than a container of tomato and cucumber slices in 24 hours.
This morning we've woken up and they are not giving us a gluten, dairy and egg-free meal. So it's now 12, what's the time? It's now 12:15 and we've called them every 15 minutes or not really, every half an hour or so, and they still haven't brought her any food.
So she must be starving.
Yeah, she is. I can hear her tummy rumbling from the other side of the room.
The first meal Olivia Lemon's mother could safely eat arrived a couple of hours later. With deliveries of any kind banned at the hotel, Olivia Lemon is worried about her mother and her own mental health.
You know, we would hate to be the people that are passing it on, and we understand the importance of isolating ourselves. We just want to be kind of treated, I guess, with a bit more like as if we're humans.
The New South Wales Department of Health has been contacted for a response, but we haven't heard back.
Isabel Rowe with that report. Well, there are reports of high levels of anxiety for pregnant women in this crisis. Advice updated yesterday continues to say pregnant women do not appear to be more severely unwell if they develop COVID-19 than the rest of the population. But the Royal Australian and New Zealand College of Obstetricians and Gynaecologists says pregnant women are an at-risk group. It has a range of recommendations you can read at their website. It adds that hospital is the safest place to have a baby and that there won't be a significant impact on a woman's experience of labour at this time in Australia. In other words, don't worry. Imagine, though, being pregnant in New York City right now, where more than 33,000 COVID cases have been recorded, with more than 770 deaths, and where the mayor says there's only 1 week's worth of medical supplies left. Michaela Solomarch is an Australian woman living in New York with her husband and toddler. They're entering their third week of self-isolation, and Michaela is due to give birth in around 4 weeks. She's been speaking with our reporter, Madeline Jenner.
I think part of the difficulty right now is that the news changes every day and the situation in New York is so uncertain. The moment that you think you have a handle on the situation, it changes again. So part of the anxiousness I think that I feel is that I don't know what the landscape will look like in 2, 3, 5 weeks' time. It's just too hard to say. And every time I've spoken to my OBGYN here in New York, she has a different answer for me because she's in the same position.
And you're in a position now where you are looking into a home birth or potentially going to have a home birth?
Yeah, so this is my second pregnancy and I have a really solid relationship with my OBGYN here. I trust her. I had a great birth experience with her the first time. So it wasn't something that we, my husband and I, had ever really considered. As the situation started to get progressively worse in New York, we were slightly concerned about what a hospital birth might entail, but it wasn't something, we were still planning on going ahead with our birth as planned. I think when the news was announced that partners were not allowed in the delivery rooms, that changed things for me. The idea of being alone and going through that on my own without my husband there just felt a little extreme, and it wasn't something that I could really overcome. And at that point, my husband and I decided that we should start looking into home births.
And are more people looking into home births? What did your OB think of the idea of a home birth? Is it better to stay out of the hospital system?
Really interesting, actually. There are 25 licensed midwives in New York City. We reached out to probably 20 of them. Most said to us in their responses that they weren't taking on new clients and that they had been inundated by requests. Those that did respond to us only did so, they assured us that they only did so because it's my second pregnancy and I had a natural birth in hospital with my firstborn. If I hadn't had a natural birth or it was my first pregnancy, the midwives would have turned us down. Interestingly, a lot of the pregnant friends I have in New York who are at various stages, some due in the next couple of weeks, some due in the next few months, all of them have said they're looking into midwives and home births because the hospital situation is just getting so progressively worse. And most of them are not having any luck because the midwives aren't taking them on. It sounds like there's a huge push towards that.
Michaela Solomarch is an Australian woman living in New York, speaking with our reporter Madeline Jenner. I'm Linda Mottram, and that is PM. Find us on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts, and don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Until next time.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.